We're going to do a special series over the next 3 weeks. That this is post Easter, and so for 3 weeks we're going to be reflecting. We've got the risen Jesus here, just over the baptism pool there. That's drawing out of the Good News Bible, and just to remind us during these weeks. And yet when you think about the resurrection, I mean, there haven't been too many of them in the history of the world. In fact, I don't know if there's been any others. And so one of the things that you face is the question of doubt. You know, can this stuff really be believed? And so tonight in this message, I want to argue the case, the resurrection of Jesus. And I want you to be the jury. Now, at certain points during this message, I want you to talk to someone. So what I'd like you to do now is to turn around and find someone sitting just by you that during the course of the message, a couple of two or three times during the message, you can actually talk to them. So mate, we don't want anyone left out. And if you think, oh goodness me, I don't know the Bible, don't worry about that, I'll just explain the question to you. It's really simple. And so try and, it may be groups of two or three in some cases, but could you turn around just for a moment and kind of make eye contact with someone and think, okay, we're going to talk about this together. Is that right? That shouldn't take long. Okay, we haven't had the questions yet, so that's shouldn't take too long. All you need to do is say, "G'day, we'll talk together later on." So tonight, what I want to speak about is this whole topic of what about my doubts? Sometimes you come to churches and they say doubt is something you mustn't have, but doubt is obviously a part of life. It's a part of life for everyone, and in every area of our lives, but especially in the whole area of relationships. We often and we very easily doubt the reality of our relationships. Now, when you're an adolescent, you go through, often adolescents go through adolescence, and you think, that's right. This only gets deeper and deeper as you go along. You go through the teenage years, and you think, do my parents really love me? You know, it never happened to you. It happens to a lot of other people. Do my parents really love me? And then an amazing thing happens. You reach your 20s, and you think, good night, they really did love me. But it's a real problem if you're working through teenage angst. And then the romantic years come, and you think, you know, does she really love me, or does he really love me? You know, and then maybe you get married and you wake up one night and think, oh, did I marry the right person? And so, you know, and then when it comes to the spiritual life, you know, we're all asked to believe in a God whom we've never seen. And come to think of it, no one else has ever seen either. And so it's hardly surprising that you have doubts. And I don't think some churches help in this, because you go along some places and they say, now all you need is faith, you know, and doubts are sinful. Now, that's not biblical, because when you read the Bible, there's a lot of expression of doubt in there. You read the Psalms, there's people really struggling with life and God, and where is God, and plagued with doubts. And so to doubt is to be human. We walk by faith, we don't walk by sight, is what the Bible tells us. And so tonight I want to talk about that. You see, in our legal system, we have what's called, you know, beyond reasonable doubt. A jury is asked to reach a decision on a case. Someone is guilty or not guilty, and they're asked to find, they come to a verdict beyond reasonable doubt. In other words, there is such a thing as reasonable doubt, but there comes a point when evidence is offered that it becomes unreasonable still to doubt. You could be sitting there in the jury, as you are tonight, and some evidence will be presented, and you can think, well, I could reasonably doubt that. But then there does come a point when evidence is presented that to persist with your doubts actually becomes unreasonable. And that's the whole basis of our justice system, because people are put in a court and there's a case, and people, one group of people will get up and argue this is what happened, and another group of people will get up and argue this is what's happened, because that's life. There's a lot of uncertainty, and a lot of it depends on how you interpret it. And so we have this concept of being beyond reasonable doubt. And so tonight, what I want to talk about is the foundational fact of the Christian faith, which is the resurrection of Jesus. Now, when you think about it, someone comes up to you and says, look, I've got a friend, and the other day they died, and they were dead for 36 hours, and then they came back to life. Would you believe them? Yeah, well, I think you'd probably say, reasonably, you'd say, so where's the evidence? So first of all, tonight, I want to read the evidence. This is from Luke's Gospel, chapter 24. Jesus had been crucified, he'd been buried. This is early Sunday morning. Luke 24. On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, the women took the spices they'd prepared and went to the tomb. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb, but when they entered, they didn't find the body of the Lord Jesus. While they were wondering about this, suddenly two men in clothes that gleamed like lightning stood beside them. In their fright, the women bowed down with their faces to the ground. But the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He's not here. He has risen. Remember how he told you while he was still with you in Galilee, the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men, be crucified, and on the third day be raised again." Then they remembered his words. When they came back from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and to all the others. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the others with them who told this to the apostles. But they did not believe the women, because their words seemed to them like nonsense. Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb. Bending over, he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves, and he went away, wondering to himself what had happened. So Jesus had been crucified on the Friday, and as dusk fell on the Friday, they took his body down from the cross and put it in the tomb. Saturday went by, which was the Jewish Sabbath, so they didn't come out and do anything. But first thing on the Sunday morning, a group of women who'd been followers of Jesus go down to the tomb. When they arrive there, they find the big stone that had been rolled across the entrance to the tomb was gone. They go in, or had been rolled aside. They go into the tomb, and when they get in there, there's some angels. And they say to them, why are you looking for the living among the dead? You know, he's not here, he's risen. And that you can imagine, well, you can't imagine. They race away from this thing, and they race back into the town. They go back to there's now 11 disciples of Jesus instead of 12, because Judas had betrayed them. And they race back into them, and they say, yeah, guess what? What you seen? You know, they're highly emotional, you can imagine. And they tell the others, you know, this is a hugely unstable. We've been down to the tomb, there was no one there. We had a vision of angels, and they said that Jesus wasn't dead, he was alive, and, you know, he's going to appear some more. And okay, so there's the others standing there, and they're hearing all this stuff, and they say, nah, it's nonsense. In other words, they express their doubt. Is that reasonable doubt, or is it unreasonable? Remember, these are a group of women, highly emotional, a hugely unusual story, and there's a cultural thing there that we have to understand back in the day, way back there, that the evidence of women was not accepted in a law court because women were deemed to be too emotional. Now, we can make all sorts of comments about that today, but the point is that in the culture of the day, that was the reality of the situation. So imagine you're one of the 12 disciples. These women come in, highly emotional, breathless. Guess what we've seen? You know, no one's ever heard a story of a resurrection before. What was their reaction? Their rejection. Was it reasonable? Or was it unreasonable? Here's the choice coming up on the screen. Was it reasonable or unreasonable? You're the jury. You talked to the person you started to talk to earlier on. Do you think their rejection, was that reasonable to reject that, or is it unreasonable? All right, sometimes juries go out for a recess and they're out for several days at a time before they reach a verdict, but we're not going to do that tonight. How many of you decided that's a reasonable thing to do, to reject the testimony? And how many of you thought it was unreasonable? Okay, the reasonable, because there's... All right. Now, there was one person there, though, who didn't just immediately come to a decision like the rest of them, just one of them. Most of the group just said, oh, it's nonsense. Couldn't be so. Except for Peter. And we read about Peter, that he got up and he said, I'm going to go and examine the evidence for myself. When you hear some evidence, no matter how unlikely it seems, the most responsible thing is to actually examine the evidence. So he does. And he goes back to the tomb, and he finds the stone had been rolled away. So he goes in there. He doesn't see any vision of angels, but obviously something's happened, because the clothes that were around Jesus are lying there. And he goes away wondering, thinking to himself, something's happened. I don't know what it is. So that's the first piece of evidence. The evidence of the women. Then there's the second piece of evidence. This is from John chapter 20, and this is the same day, this is now the evening. On the evening of that first day of the week, when the disciples were together with the doors locked for fear of the Jewish leaders, Jesus came and stood among them and said, peace be with you. After he said this, he showed them his hands and side. The disciples were overjoyed when they saw the Lord. Now Thomas, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, we've seen the Lord. But he said to them, unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe. So here's that night. This whole day had gone by. And they are inside at night with the doors locked because they were fearful the Jewish religious authorities would come for them next. And suddenly, there in their midst, was Jesus. And he talks to them, peace be with you, he says to them. And they're just, I mean, now they are confronted with evidence at a new level altogether. And they're amazed. They're just overjoyed, just unbelieving. But this is amazing. Jesus has actually appeared to us. He is alive after all. But Thomas wasn't there. Now, Thomas was one of the 12. And later that night or the next day or whenever it was, they met Thomas. And they said to him, Thomas, we've actually seen Jesus. He's alive. And Thomas says, no. He said, I'm not going to believe that. Now, is that reasonable? Or unreasonable? Is that reasonable doubt? Unreasonable doubt. Now, you've got to think about this for a minute. These are a bunch of people who had 3 years together. For 3 years, they'd followed Jesus around the countryside. They'd listened to Jesus' teaching. They'd lived closely, intimately together. They knew each other. One of the things about this company of Jesus' followers was the level of integrity that existed among them. And all of his colleagues says, this is true. We have seen this. Jesus is alive. He's appeared to us. Faith involves testing the credibility of eyewitnesses. Are these credible witnesses? And Thomas says, no. I will not believe not enough for me to hear from you. I won't believe unless I can put my hand in his side, where they put the spear, and put my hand in his hand where they put the nails through. So is that reasonable? Is that unreasonable? Here's your options again. So Thomas, is Thomas' unbelief at this point, is that reasonable unbelief? Or is this now becoming unreasonable? Have a talk for a moment again. Okay, there's only two options here, so probably it shouldn't take too long to canvass the options. How many of you think Thomas was being quite reasonable to reject that? How many of you thought it was reasonable to reject? How many of you think it's unreasonable, given the evidence being presented by the others? Right. So let's look at the third evidence. This is from John, further on in John chapter 20. A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here, see my hands? Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Then Jesus told him, "Because you've seen me, you've believed. Blessed are those who've not seen, yet have believed." So this is a week later. All the disciples are together again, and this time Thomas is with them, and Jesus appears once again. And he says to Thomas, "Here's my hands. Come put your hands in my... And here's my side where they put the spear in. Come and put your hands there." If Thomas at that point has said, "No, I won't believe that," is that reasonable or unreasonable? Okay. That's the nature of evidence. It's like a cumulative thing. First of all came the evidence of the women, and it was relatively easy to dismiss it. Bunch of emotional women are, they, you know, these are a bunch of blokes, you see, and they're easy to dismiss it. Then if you're Thomas, not so easy to dismiss the fact that all of your colleagues, all of them, said, "We have actually seen Jesus alive." This no longer can you say, this is just a bunch of emotional women early in the morning, you know, hallucinating, this kind of stuff. Now it's all your colleagues. And they are saying, "We've actually seen this." But I noticed a whole lot of you felt Thomas was quite reasonable to reject that. But Jesus didn't think that. Because he says to Thomas, "It's all very well for you to believe, Thomas. But the people who are really blessed are those who don't see and yet believe." So that Jesus obviously thought Thomas' unbelief was actually unreasonable. He didn't tell them off for rejecting the testimony of the women, but he did tell Thomas off for rejecting the testimony of his colleagues, all of which he knew, all of whom he knew, all of which he knew were honest men. And he wouldn't accept it. And that's the nature of faith. You've got to ask, are the people who are saying these things, are they credible? Because you see, the faith of every one of us for the last 2,000 years actually rests on the testimony of these people. They said, "We have seen the Lord." And we could ask, well, if people really had that experience, you know, if Jesus really was who he claimed to be, he really was the Son of God, and he really came back from the dead, and people really met him, well, these guys would change the world, wouldn't they? Well, of course, that's what they did. They started a movement which in 300 years had more than 50% of the population of the Roman Empire believing in Jesus. They changed the social fabric of the society in which they lived. And they did the kind of things you'd expect that if this had really happened, if it was really true, would happen. And those things happen. And down through 2,000 years, there are multitudes of people who've been inspired by the resurrection of Jesus and their faith in him to bring about really significant transformation in the world for good. And so here's Thomas, and he's standing. Finally, Jesus appears to him. Put your hands in my hands. Put your hand in my side. Thomas had no option. As far as we know from the evidence in the New Testament, everyone who met the risen Christ became a believer. There's someone like James, who was Jesus' brother, that when we actually meet James in the gospel, he thought Jesus was crazy. And he said that to him. You know, here was his brother going around performing miracles and making remarkable claims and giving this teaching, and he said, you know, he's crazy. But then later on, the next time we meet James, he's actually the leader of the church in Jerusalem. And how on earth did that happen? Well, we just know from one little sentence that Paul writes in one of his letters. He just says, he appeared also to James. And that was enough. I mean, if you actually met, you had a personal meeting with Jesus face to face. At that point, it's totally unreasonable to say this man did not come back from the dead. And then there was Peter. Peter had was a failure. He had claimed to be a follower of Jesus, and when the heat went on, he just betrayed Jesus. He said he never knew him, and he ran, and it was a kind of shameful thing. And then Jesus appeared to him at the moment of the resurrection. I might talk about this next Sunday night, but at the moment of the resurrection, the angel said, go and tell his disciples and Peter that he's been raised from the dead. Because Peter was just so overwhelmed with a sense of guilt. But he ended up, within 6 weeks, he ended up on the streets of Jerusalem proclaiming the fact that Jesus had been raised from the dead. I mean, something happened to him, and we know what happened. He met Jesus alive, and then there was Paul. Paul had committed his life to opposing the Christians, and he was off to Damascus, breathing fire through his nostrils against the Christians, and on the road to Damascus, he has an encounter with the risen Christ. And so once people get like face-to-face encounter, it's doubt becomes completely unreasonable. So here's Thomas. He's like down on his knees in front of Jesus, and he's saying to him, my Lord and my God. Now, it's really interesting seeing Jesus' reaction. Jesus did not say, hang on a minute. Hey, hang on. I'm just a man. Why are you calling me Lord and God? There's only one God. Now, most religious teachers in the history of the world, that's what they would say. If someone said to them, you are God, they'd say, oh, hang on. No, I'm not. I'm just a teacher or a prophet or whatever. But not Jesus. Here's Thomas saying to him, my Lord and my God. He's saying this to a human being. And Jesus doesn't say, hang on, don't say that. I'm just a man. He doesn't. He said, blessed are you, Thomas, that you've actually come to see this. But it's a kind of backhanded compliment because he said, in actual fact, more blessed are those who haven't seen and yet believe. Now, some of you tonight, you've come in here and you've got a whole lot of doubts about the Christian faith. Well, that's okay. There's no law against that. If you're going to grow into a loving relationship with anyone, you're going to have all sorts of doubts about it as the relationship grows, until you finally come to a point where you know you're loved and accepted and so on. So it is with Jesus. When you're coming towards faith, you get overwhelmed with all sorts of doubts. You know, is this really true? Are these people all deceiving themselves? And what the Bible makes very clear, what human nature makes very clear to us, the whole experience in the world is when you've got doubts, what do? You examine the evidence. Is there credible evidence? And the answer for the resurrection is yes, there is. It's eyewitness evidence. It's the witness of people who were there and who saw it, and people who initially didn't believe. They said, it's just nonsense. You can't believe this stuff. Hysterical woman, you know, coming up with stories. Nah. And then they met Jesus. And even Thomas, he's finally overwhelmed. He can just say, my Lord and my God. And Jesus said to Thomas, because you've seen me, you've believed. Blessed are those who've not seen, yet have believed. He's actually talking about us. And he's saying it's better, actually. It takes more faith not to see and yet believe. And Thomas, it was actually no big deal for Thomas to come to faith when here was Jesus standing in front of him, obviously raised from the dead. Some of you have heard of an American named Lee Strobel. And Lee was a lawyer. He graduated from law school and became a journalist with the Chicago Tribune. And he was here a few years ago, and I met him here. Really lovely guy. One other thing about Lee Strobel, he was an atheist. He was a member of the American Atheist Society. And he was a convinced atheist. He believed this whole Christian thing was just fables and so forth. He didn't want to believe. And then, but in his book that he's written about his journey to faith, he makes a really interesting confession at the start. He said that he outlined his difficulties with the Christian faith and the reason he didn't believe. And he says this: sure, I could see some gaps and inconsistencies, but I had a strong motivation to ignore them, a self-serving and immoral lifestyle that I'd be compelled to abandon if I were ever to change my views and become a follower of Jesus. Because you see, when you evaluate the evidence for the resurrection, there's like two sides to it. One is the resurrection is actually a very unusual event, so it's quite right to ask, you know, what's the evidence? But the other side of this whole thing is that if it's true, if it's actually true, it really means I can no longer live a life that's just based around me and me doing just what I want to do. If this whole thing is true, if God has actually entered our humanity, become one of us, and he's shown us the way in life, well, my word, that has huge implications. And so you've got to ask yourself, am I ready to do this? Now, Lee Strobel, as he tells the story, that one day the worst thing he could ever imagine in his life happened, and that is his wife came home, and she said, honey, I've become a Christian. And he said his world crashed in. He's a member of the American Atheists Association. This wasn't supposed to happen. And he said he was horrified. He thought his wife would end up like a nun, you know. And he said, but she didn't. In fact, she became more loving and more caring. He said he felt initially he'd been duped. It was like a bait and switch thing, that he'd married one wife and sort of got another one. He married a non-religious woman and suddenly he's got this religious woman in his house. But he said to his absolute amazement, she became in so many ways a better person, that he actually loved more. And so finally he gave in to her invitations to come to church. And he took along his journalist notebook, so if anyone saw him there that he knew, he could say, oh, I'm just covering it, investigating it. And he said, so he started on a quest. And he used his journalistic abilities and his legal mind to examine the evidence. He finally wrote a book called The Case for Christ, which is the story of how he came from atheism, complete unbelief, to being a follower of Jesus. And then he talks, though, the other thing he talked about is the change that happened in his life. And he says this, the end of his book. In fact, so radical was the difference in my life that a few months after I became a follower of Jesus, our five-year-old daughter, Allison, went up to my wife and said, Mummy, I want God to do for me what he's done for Daddy. Here was a little girl who'd only known a father who was profane, angry, verbally harsh, and all too often absent. And even though she'd never interviewed a scholar, never analyzed the data, never investigated historical evidence, she'd seen up close the influence that Jesus can have on one person's life. In effect, she was saying, if this is what God does to a human being, that's what I want for me. So is it reasonable or unreasonable? Is the evidence for the resurrection of Jesus, is it reasonable, unreasonable? Well, you're the jury. And in this case, you're actually a jury of one. Well, you've got to weigh the evidence and you've got to think for yourself. But let me suggest to you, there are these two dimensions to it. It's one thing to look at the evidence in the New Testament. And most people have not actually read the New Testament and then decided, no, the evidence isn't there. Most people I find who read the New Testament will admit afterwards, oh yeah, I can see why you believe this stuff. You know, the evidence is there. But the real challenge is, am I really willing to let Jesus change the direction of my life? Because I really like it the way I am, just living for myself. Thank you very much. I'm not sure that I want to change. And so there's a two-prong when it comes to investigating the evidence and facing your doubts and being a follower. It's actually not quite as simple as it is in a lot of things. There's like a barb in this thing. Am I really willing to go where the evidence suggests? And am I really willing to read about Jesus, and on the basis of what I read, I'm prepared to let my life be transformed? And that's the challenge that Jesus presents to us. I'd like to invite you to come on this journey. Jesus won't actually take out all the joy and the fun out of your life, which is what most people think. In fact, it's actually, I know this is hard to believe, but actually your life ends up more fulfilling. You don't actually end up a religious nutter unless you want to be. Jesus actually offers a life that's more fulfilling, more loving, and more caring than you would have had before. But it's your choice. You've got to weigh the evidence and think, okay, are these doubts that I've got about all this stuff, are they reasonable? Or have I become unreasonable? Let's bow our heads and just reflect on this for a moment. Lord, all of us have doubts. Because to be human is to have doubts. And so when we have them, Lord, I just pray you'll give us the courage to face them honestly. And have the courage to look at the evidence. And to have the courage to look at ourselves. And to ask the questions of ourselves, do I really want Jesus to be alive? Because often it's not a question of can I believe that he's alive, but do I want him to be? What are the changes that would be up front for me if he was? Lord, I just pray that you might give us the courage to face these things, to open our hearts to you in a way perhaps we never ever have before. Because we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. If you'd like to do something about this, we have a lot of ways we could help you, really. There's a response card inside your newsletter here, and if you flip it over on the back, there's some boxes you could tick here about I'd like to find out more about Christianity and faith, or I'd like to become a follower of Jesus, or various other things. And if you'd like to follow up on this, we'd like